So you might see in the chat that I did put our next module starts in January. And so it will be establishing a daily practice with Haymit, and it'll go for 6 weeks. Yeah, 6 weeks from January 10th through February 14th. So we get to leave on Valentine's Day. Let's see. So we do have, you know, quite a bit of a break, about a month long. So don't forget us and don't lose that momentum, that forward momentum. And let's see. I've got a couple more people joining, and then I'll go ahead and turn it over to Donna to give us another special announcement. All right, Donna, I'm going to go ahead and spotlight you, and you can go ahead and start whenever you're ready.
Okay. Thank you so much. We have breaking news. I met with Geshe Gelug this afternoon, and, you know, we have at the end of the month on December 29, we have Lama Tsongkhapa Day coming up. This is a really important holy day in our tradition because Lama Tsongkhapa is founder of our tradition. Geshe Gelug has very kindly offered to provide refuge on that day for any students who want to take it. So I don't even need to explain to all of you, because I know you've been listening closely to Ravi for the last few weeks, how important refuge is and what it means to take refuge. This will be at 5:30 on the evening of December 29, and we'll be taking refuge. I'll be sending out an email to the whole community, so people will have an opportunity to register, and we need you to register for it because Geshe-la needs to know how many male persons and how many female persons, so you get your refuge name. That's it. I'm just really excited. This is a great opportunity, and this is also the first time in a couple of years that we have Geshe-la in person at the center. So do take the advantage of the opportunity if you haven't taken refuge. If you have taken refuge and you want to renew your vows, you're also welcome to come. You don't need to register for that. We just need that for new students. And then just so you know, because this is a holy day, after the refuge ceremony, we will also be doing some prayers and reciting some Lam Rim texts, and then we'll go outside and circumambulate the stupa and offer lights at the stupa. So it's going to be a great night. If you're not taking refuge and you just want to offer lights, of course you can come at any time after dark and do that, or if you come around 6:30 to join the prayers, or you can just come and watch the refuge ceremony and offer support to those who are taking it. So big night, lots of opportunities, and you all are the first to hear the breaking news.
So Donna, I have a quick question. Sure. It is going to be in person then at the center?
It's going to be in person at the center.
Okay, will anyone be able to do it remotely?
You know, that's a really good question. That didn't occur to me to ask Geshe-la. So I will ask him. I will get back on that. Thank you. Good question.
All right. Anything else, Donna? Thanks for sharing that awesome news with us.
That's all I've got. So I will leave you all to your class, and have a great rest of the evening, and I'll see you all sometime. Hope to see lots of you on the Lama Tsongkhapa Day.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Donna.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. And Donna, her name reminded me to make an announcement that please remember that all of Kadampa Center's classes, whether they're in person or virtual, are all done on a donation basis. So anything helps, and there's lots of different ways you can make a generosity offerings, sorry. and that could be with your time, or money, or any talents that you might have that you can, you know, bring to the center. So, all those different ways are on the page of the information page that you can access, through the materials. But if you have any questions about that, just let me know. But I know Robbie has a lot to cover this evening, so I'm going to stop talking and turn it over to Robbie now.
Thank you, Linda, and I apologize to everyone for my absence last week. I was all ready to go with my notes out in front of me and got up from the computer and walked away and came back, and the internet was down in my neighborhood, unfortunately. But I think we can cover the important material tonight. We'll talk a little bit about the Dharma and the Sangha, having talked about the Buddha. So we'll complete our discussion of the three jewels, and then I'll talk a little bit about the refuge ceremony and what that entails. So with no further ado, let's begin with our prayers. Linda, I'll read those, and you can read along with me at home. We'll do them in English. And as always, we start with taking refuge and generating bodhicitta, the mind that wishes to become enlightened for the benefit of others. So we're taking refuge and generating bodhicitta three times. Read the four immeasurables once, and then make a short mandala offering. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun, and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offered. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamnirya Tayami. And now we'll begin our meditation. I think people are becoming more familiar with it. We'll start with checking our posture.
Excuse me, Robbie, before you get started.
Mm-hmm.
Update, I just checked with Geshla, and people will be able to take refuge remotely if you're not in Raleigh.
Okay.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. A message from our sponsor. Now back to our regularly scheduled program. Check your posture. Back a little straighter than you normally sit, not slumped back in your chair. Head may be a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Eyes either just slightly open, letting in a little bit light, or lightly closed. Tongue on the hard palate behind our upper teeth. Lips lightly closed. Shoulders down. and back a little bit so our chest and our energy channels are open. We're not hunched over, blocking the energy flow. Upper arms a little bit away from our torso. And our hands in our lap with our right hand on left. Thumbs touching slightly below the level of our navel, representing the union of wisdom and compassion. That is the mind of enlightenment, which is a possibility for all of us. Our feet flat on the floor. If we're sitting in a chair, it's fine to put a cushion underneath them. If you're on a cushion, your legs are crossed in a position that you find comfortable and stable. So take a moment, just scan your body, identify any sources of tension or discomfort now and address those so that they don't become a distraction throughout the meditation. And we begin by taking three slow, deep breaths with the abdomen expanding on the in-breath. And contracting on the out-breath. Just three times slowly like that. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And again, we establish our motivation that we touched on in the prayers. And as much as possible, we generate the bodhicitta motivation, the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of others, so that everything I do, even this simple 10-minute meditation, is done not just for my own peace of mind, but for the happiness of all living beings. It's a huge, all-inclusive motivation. No one is left out. And having set our motivation, we now begin the meditation. Mind on breath. Nothing more, nothing less than that. Direct perception of the physical sensation of the breath moving in and out through our nostrils. And when we notice that our mind has moved on to another object, we set that aside and come back to the breath. And that's really what we mean by mindfulness, the ability to notice when we've wandered away from the chosen object of concentration. It's that ability of the mind to perceive that it's wandered and to bring itself back. And that's the substance of the meditation. And now we can end our meditation with a dedication. We can acknowledge that we've done something a little bit unusual. We've put some effort into developing some concentration, one of the necessary qualities to develop on the path. And that has made a positive imprint on our mind stream. And we think, may this positive energy not be lost, but may it grow and ripen in a way that ultimately benefits all living beings. And you can relax your concentration. Okay. See, did we have any questions from last week or 2 weeks ago, Linda? Any come in to you?
Okay. No.
So we have that one that's sitting there, and I'll get to that before we finish this evening.
Okay.
We're talking about the three objects of refuge, referred to the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And 2 weeks ago, we talked about the Buddha, and I used a lot of complicated terms, and don't at all feel obliged that you have to memorize those or throw them into your day-to-day conversation. I just wanted people to hear them because you will encounter them if you hang out with the Buddhist crowd. But we basically said that the Buddha has two main aspects. One is the conventional aspect of the Buddha jewel, and that is his emanation or her emanation in a physical form, in a body. This is what we think of as Shakyamuni Buddha, who lived 2,500 years ago. That's the Buddha presenting himself in a way that we can relate to. As an ordinary human being who sat underneath the Bodhi tree and worked with his mind and became enlightened. But the Buddha can also manifest in countless other ways. One way is, as I touched on, he can manifest in what's called a pure realm, which is a place where very high and not yet enlightened, but very high practitioners go to practice. And the Buddha can manifest in countless ways according to the needs of suffering human beings, which most of us qualify as. It all depends on what we have the karma to perceive. And for most of us, someone like Shakyamuni Buddha is someone that we can understand and relate to. We have that karma. We don't, you know, the concept of a light body in a pure realm, most of us kind of go, give me a break. You know, we don't really have the karma to appreciate that or to participate in that. Because really all a Buddha is completely wise, completely compassionate, but a Buddha is not all powerful in that he cannot remove our negative karma. He cannot develop realizations for us. All a Buddha can do is teach. He or she can teach in a way that hopefully we have the karma to appreciate. So the Buddha manifests physically in various forms, and that's the conventional Buddha jewel. The ultimate Buddha jewel is the mind of the Buddha, and in particular, its emptiness and its realizations, its wisdom, its understanding of all the stages of the path. That's the ultimate Buddha jewel. And eventually, or there is a possibility for each of us to develop that type mind on our own, so that it no longer is exterior, but it's interior. Our mind becomes similar to the mind of a Buddha, or does become the mind of a Buddha when we achieve enlightenment, and our mind will have those characteristics also. So that's the Buddha jewel. But normally we think of the Shakyamuni Buddha, the physical manifestation of enlightenment who lived 2,500 years ago. Or we may think of, there have been other Buddhas too. You know, we may see His Holiness the Dalai Lama as a Buddha, as an enlightened being. He would represent a conventional Buddha jewel if we perceive him in that way. The second jewel, I wanted to talk about the Dharma and Sangha, and then I'll talk a little bit about the actual refuge ceremony that's going to be available at the end of this month and what that entails. The Dharma jewel, the conventional Dharma jewel is the teachings of the Buddha, the teachings that Shakyamuni Buddha gave 2,500 years ago. It said there are 84,000 different teachings. And when I say the teachings, I don't mean the books or the printed form. I refer to the actual oral tradition of the teachings being passed down and eventually coming to us through such highly qualified teachers as Lama Zopa Rinpoche, His Holiness the Dalai Lama. That's the conventional Dharma, the teachings that separate us from suffering. Okay, the ultimate Dharma jewel is the actual realizations in the mind of an arhat. Okay, an arhat, as you may remember, is someone who perceives reality directly, who sees the, and this is not the subject of this course, but it's what defines an arhat or a noble being, sees the emptiness of all phenomena. That things don't exist the way we think they do. They exist in a much more fluid and changeable form. An arhat is a noble being, is someone who can look at a pencil or a pen, and they see the, again, we're using these terms, they're seeing the conventionally existent pen that functions, that I can write with and that runs out of ink, and it's not very expensive, so I throw it away and disintegrates. They see that pen, but also at the same time, inseparably from seeing the conventional pen, they see the ultimate nature of the pen, which is its emptiness, its lack of inherent existence. Okay? And the arhat sees all phenomena that way, seeing the conventional and the ultimate nature simultaneously, inseparably and non-contradictory, okay? Seeing the emptiness of the pen does not say the pen doesn't exist. It's just being very accurate about how it does exist. And the arhat sees everything, every physical object, every person, every emotion they have, every thought that they have, everything is seen by an arhat in its ultimate nature, and in addition to its conventional nature. So that's what an arhat is. And the ultimate, the ultimate Dharma is the realizations, the understandings, the complete congruence of one's mind with the path to enlightenment. The realization that death is inevitable. It's just not an intellectual concept, but it is part of your thought process continuously. The realization of the truth of karma, okay? The realization of the truth of suffering. These are all realizations. And those realizations in the mind of a being who sees nature, sees emptiness, that's the ultimate Dharma. And that is also, like enlightenment, something that our own mind is capable of. We have the potential for becoming an arhat and for developing those realizations ourselves. Okay? So we start with the conventional Dharma, the teachings, as we hear them at Kadampa Center, as we hear them when we go to His Holiness speak, as we read about them, but it's not the actual book, okay? The book is a symbol. The actual printed text is a symbol, but it's not even, that's not the conventional Dharma. The conventional Dharma is the teachings given by Shakyamuni Buddha. The ultimate Dharma is the realization of those teachings in the mind of an arhat, okay? That's the Dharma jewel. The third jewel is the Sangha jewel. The conventional, and this is a term that's used in a lot of different ways, so we're just going by the textbook definitions here, but you'll hear that people use the word Sangha in a lot of ways. When we're talking about taking refuge in the Sangha jewel, the conventional Sangha is an individual arhat or arya being, noble being, someone who has realized emptiness, who undersees emptiness directly. Okay. That's the conventional Sangha jewel, an arhat. Okay. Now, the people at Kadampa Center and elsewhere who are taken robes, they are, in a way, they are symbols or symbolic representations of the conventional Sangha, in the sense we're using the term Sangha. We refer to them as Sangha or robe Sangha. But the actual Sangha jewel can be a monk, a nun, a lay person. You know, there's no specific correlation. And every monk and nun is not an arhat, okay? So a little bit of difference how we normally use the word Sangha. And then frequently, particularly in the West, we refer to everybody in the Buddhist community as the Sangha. Everybody who participates at Kadampa Center, we refer to that as our local Sangha. So the word is used different ways. But when we're talking about the Sangha jewel, the conventional Sangha is an arhat, an individual arhat. One arhat is the Sangha jewel. Of course, there are lots of arhats, so they're all the Sangha jewels. The ultimate Sangha is very similar to the ultimate Dharma. It's the arhat's personal liberation, the liberation that exists in the mind of an arhat. Someone who has sees emptiness directly, has achieved personal liberation, and no longer creates the causes for personal suffering. So that's the ultimate Sangha. Okay, and again, that's a possibility, a potential that exists in each of us to develop that quality, the personal liberation of an Arya being or an Arhat. Okay, so those are the three jewels of refuge. A little bit, not really. The conventional ones are easier to wrap your mind around, but the ultimate ones are what we ultimately take refuge in, which means we're ultimately taking refuge in our own qualities, in our own mind, as we progress along the path. The Buddha, you know, I don't think the Buddha goes for refuge to the three jewels. He just exists as the three jewels. His mind is the three ultimate jewels. He doesn't have to go for refuge to anything outside himself or herself. But for most of us, we're not at that stage. So we go to the conventional objects of refuge and the symbolic representations of them. You know, when we see a statue of the Buddha at Kadampa Center, we don't take refuge in the statue, but that brings to mind the conventional Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, and we take refuge in that. When we see all the teachings, all the books on the altar at Kadampa Center, we're not taking refuge in those physical books, but they are symbolic and bring to mind the teachings of the Buddha, which are the conventional Dharma in which we take refuge. When we see the robed Sangha at Kadampa Center, we are not taking refuge in those individuals. They are symbolic of the arhat, the one who realizes emptiness, whom we take as the conventional Sangha and take refuge in. And then ultimately, our mind develops those qualities that those three jewels possess, and that becomes our ultimate refuge, which is within ourselves eventually. Okay, so those are the three objects of refuge, the three jewels. And wonderful timing that we have each one of you has the opportunity to participate in a refuge ceremony with Geshe Gelug. And as Donna said, that will be the first time he's been at the center in almost 2 years. So it's on a holy day. So if this is something that you're interested in, it couldn't be more auspicious, I think. The ceremony is quite simple. It doesn't even last an hour. Okay. You will be given a Tibetan or refuge name, which will kind of carry with you through the rest of your Buddhist career. There's a very simple ceremony where the refuge guru, in this case Geshe Gelug, gives you the refuge vows. And this is kind of like confirmation in some Christian denominations. It's the entry into the Buddhist path. This is, we don't give out cards, but this kind of makes you a card-carrying Buddhist. It doesn't mean that you understand all the teachings of the Buddha, or that you accept them all, or that you, for example, have an absolute belief in past and future lives, or you absolutely accept this or that. But it means that you have looked at the Buddhist path and it makes sense to you. And by that, I mean in particular an understanding of karma, a sense that karma is real, that our actions have consequences that cause us both happiness and suffering. Okay, I think a sense of impermanence also, an understanding that death is inevitable, that this life will not last forever. I think some sense of impermanence about the phenomena of life is helpful, but it's not like you've read through all the texts, you've read through Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand and you can recite it. It just means a fundamental sense of this is the path that I would like to follow and study more closely. And it doesn't mean that at some point in your life you can't decide to become a Hindu or a Christian or another thing, that you won't be thrown into some horrible hell if you turn your back on your Buddhist refuge. But if you continue to follow the Buddhist path, it is a source of strength. And it said it's something that you should think about every day after having taken these vows. Now, vows are given at lots of levels in the Buddhist path. And they're always given with the understanding that nobody's going to be able to keep them perfectly initially. It's expected that, you know, you will, of course there'll be times when you don't go for refuge. We're just beginners on the path. But the vows that you take can help strengthen that. So you take that and you'll be on one knee and you'll repeat some things after Geshe Gelug, some that will make sense and some that won't make sense. But it's not a long ceremony at all. The refuge vows are vows that you take one time. Okay. You can sit in and listen on other refuge ceremonies and, you know, strengthen your vows, but you take the vows once. It's a one-time event, as opposed to some of the other vows like the Bodhisattva vows and the tantric vows, which you take over and over and over again from various teachers. You should have some respect for the refuge guru, an acknowledgement that he knows more about the subject than you do is the primary amount of respect that you should have. It doesn't mean that Geshe Gelug would be your root guru, okay? It does establish a connection with him, but certainly you may encounter other teachers that you have a stronger connection with, but you don't have to sit and wait until you get blown off your cushion by one particular teacher and take refuge with them. You can go ahead and take refuge to enter into the path with any teacher who you think is a valid teacher, who you respect, and who you understand, see as knowing more than you do about the path. So that's the refuge ceremony. It's very simple. And then Geshe Gelup will offer the five lay precepts. And this is the second part. It's always offered in conjunction with the refuge ceremony. And the five lay precepts are taking vows not to kill, not to steal, not to lie, not to indulge in sexual misconduct, which is, there's some incredibly graphic descriptions of what that involves with various organs in various places in some of the texts, but generally it's referred to as not having sexual relations with someone else's partner. And the last one is not to use intoxicants. And so the first question is, do I have to take all five of those? That's everybody's first question. And just about every teacher that I've come across says you're allowed to pick and choose. This is a buffet. For example, if you want to have a glass of wine on Saturday evening with your friends, you don't have to take that vow, okay? But if it's something you'd rather give up anyway or have given up, go ahead and take the vow, okay? If you don't think, if for some reason you really like killing and you know you can't keep that vow, don't take that one. Again, these vows they're given for a lifetime. You're taking them for the rest of your life. They're given with the understanding that you certainly will break most or all of them. I mean, who can go through life without lying in any sort of way? But you have an opportunity to purify your broken vows through various purification practices. So those are the five lay precepts. And the vows are given in Tibetan Buddhism not in terms of fencing you in or confining you, but really in the sense of just supporting you in your spiritual practice. Because if you're out all week killing, stealing, committing sexual misconduct, and getting drunk as a skunk, and then you show up at the Dhamma Center on Sunday morning, probably not, anything's possible, but probably not going to get a lot of benefit from the teachings that you hear. So these are just guidelines that support you. And you can take these vows with the understanding that you very well may break them. But if it seems reasonable to aspire to keeping these vows, I would encourage you to take as many of them as you feel comfortable with. So that's really what will be involved. I think the whole ceremony will last less than an hour. We ask people to wear a mask, and certainly we would like you to be vaccinated or have a negative test a day or two before you come. That's done on the honor system, but that's kind of the expectations of being part of a community in this day and age. And you'll be spaced out. There won't be so many people there that you'll be cramped in. Certainly you'll be able to social distance, and we have some air filters that'll be running, and you'll only be in the room for 45 to 50 minutes, I think. So that's the refuge ceremony, and it's something to think about, and a very special opportunity. If this is all at all appealing to you, a really auspicious way to participate in this. Are there any questions about the refuge ceremony or the mental? If you're going to participate, reflect on the two causes of going for refuge. The first is dread or fear, which is based on an understanding of karma and knowledge that my actions are causing me problems. Things aren't working out as well as I'd like them to. I don't want to continue like this. Okay? That's the dread. And then some sense of confidence, not blind faith, a sense of confidence that the Buddhist path, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are a valid source of refuge. So some fear or dread, or as I like to say, the informed knowledge about the consequences of one's actions. We don't step in front of speeding cars because we know it will cause problems. Okay, that's the kind of fear or dread we're talking about here. And then some confidence in the three jewels. So those are the mental attitudes that would bring you to participation in this ceremony. Okay, any questions? Is Lila, let's see, was that other question from Lila, Linda?
Is Leah, maybe?
Is she here tonight?
I think Laura, maybe.
Oh, maybe it was Laura.
Is Laura here?
I'm here.
Okay. Let's see, I'll go ahead and read your question. Why don't you go ahead and ask it, okay? Again, because it may have changed since this was 3 weeks ago that it came in. Yeah.
It hasn't changed. But I've been trying, like you talk about doing refuge and purifying karma and doing, prostrations is highly recommended to purify karma. And I've Googled and I just, like, who are the 35 Buddhas? You know, we're not going
to. That is way beyond my pay grade to answer that, okay? You've not been able to find any explanation on them anywhere?
Just, like, what they purify and...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when you say, who are they? They're just various aspects of the enlightened mind, ultimately. Okay, they're not, each one doesn't represent a historical figure like Shakyamuni Buddha. They are all manifestations of enlightened mind, okay? Various aspects of enlightened mind, the Buddha's mind manifesting in different ways to deal with different problems we have that if we're open to, we can learn something from. If our mind is closed, then it's of no benefit. But I would just say they're different aspects of enlightened mind. Is that at all what you were asking?
That helps, yeah. I figured that they were. I guess part of what I read that they purify is, like, I guess not modern day sins, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Okay. Well, the thing about the purification... Really, this is a self-cleaning cycle, okay? They can't purify you. You are purifying your mind, okay? They are tools that you use in this process, okay? But the purification, the cleaning, you're doing that yourself, okay? It's not anything mystical or not anything, like I said, the Buddha can't remove your negative karma. You have to purify that on your own. But these are tools to help you in that process. Okay?
Yes, that helps.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I'm just not super qualified to answer it, I'll tell you that. As our cop-out line, and for those of us who lead these classes, is, oh, that's a great question for a guest sheet. Yes.
No, I understand, and I think, like, the more you do them, the more you do start to realize it is, like, a self-purification thing, humility or, practice and visualization, practice and prayer. But I get, when I first started, there was a lot of emphasis put on that. And so it seemed a lot more symbolic, I guess, what is the symbolism?
Yeah. Okay, I'm definitely not an expert on that, but I tell people, you come to Kadampa Center and some stuff seems so esoteric and there's all this imagery and everything, and it all comes down to working with your own mind. Okay. These are things to help you work with your mind, and that's what it's all about. Dealing with your own mind. No matter how complicated and elaborate it seems, that's what it all comes down to. Working with your own mind. Whereas, I think Lama Lama Yeshe wrote a book called Being Your Own Therapist or something like that. You're both the client and the therapist, okay? You're lying on the couch, but you're also sitting in the chair listening, okay? We have some wonderful examples in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha that can help us in that process. Any other
questions? Yeah, Leah has a question. Leah, you can unmute.
Hi, thank you. And quick question, hope you can hear me.
Yes.
Okay, good. Just in regards to the refuge ceremony and taking it one time, if a person has taken it in a different form of Buddhism, is it possible to take it in Tibetan Buddhism for the first time?
Do you mind my asking what form of Buddhism you took it in? If this is you or your whatever.
At the time, also called Sen.
Okay, yeah. I think it would be perfectly, I think I would have no qualms about going ahead and taking the Tibetan form one time, yeah, because you're given a Tibetan name and you're, yeah, I think that would be, yeah, I don't think that would cause any problems. Yeah, if you want to kind of switch your membership from one denomination to another, though ultimately they're very similar in what they believe, I think taking this one time would be fine. I wouldn't have any qualms about that.
Thank you.
But you do have to register with Donna for this so that Yeshe Gelert can get the right number of names. Yeah, because you will be given a little card with your Dharma, what you refer to as your Dharma name. Not that we don't use them at Kadampa Center. I don't know what anybody's Dharma name is, really. They're not secrets, but it's just part of the ceremony.
Yeah. I have a question too, please.
Okay.
So I also took
talking. Hold on, let me see. Who's talking?
Me.
Okay, now I see you. Okay.
So I took refuge in 2014, so 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. I used to live in Boulder, Colorado, with Shambhala.
Mm-hmm.
And Shambhala had my teacher, but they were lay teachers. Mm-hmm. But they were from Tibetan too, because of my question is like the person who just said Sen, right? Mm-hmm. But my teacher said, you don't have to be a Buddhist, you know, you're a Hindu, but if you want to start the path, you're interested in Buddhism, then you need to take refuge.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, and I got a name, and my name is, my name is Yeshe Shulu. Mm-hmm. So it's a Tibetan name, which means Wisdom Dharma Song.
Mm-hmm.
So am I okay? I already took refuge?
You've taken refuge. As Donna said, you can come and sit in the back of the room and listen to the ceremony and kind of renew it to yourself. But you've gone through you don't actually participate in the ceremony again.
Okay, so, I won't be here. I mean, I wish I could, but I'm going to be in Colorado. Can I see it on YouTube? Can I see it in Zoom? Can I?
I don't know if it'll be on YouTube, but...
I mean, Zoom, sorry.
Yeah.
For the people who are going to take it... remotely.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, it sounds like okay. Yeah, Donna just found out, so all the details haven't been worked out, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay, so let's just do a very brief meditation to wind things up in this module. Establish your posture. Set your motivation. Now just a minute of concentrating on the breath. And now we'll just do a brief review meditation on the three jewels, the three objects of refuge. The first is the Buddha, symbolized by statues of the Buddha, but we're not taking refuge in the statues. We take refuge in the conventional Buddha, which are the physical manifestations of the Buddha, such as Shakyamuni Buddha, who lived 2,500 years ago, was a human being who achieved enlightenment during his lifetime on earth. He is the example for all of us. The ultimate Buddha jewel is the mind of the enlightened beings. With the two main characteristics being the emptiness of that mind and its realizations. And each of us has the potential to develop the mind of enlightenment in our own consciousness. The second jewel of refuge is the Dharma jewel, symbolized by the books and the texts that we see at Kadampa Center that we have in our home. We're not taking refuge in books or physical objects. We take refuge in the conventional Dharma, which is the actual teachings that have been transmitted in an unbroken lineage from Shakyamuni Buddha down to our own teachers. The ultimate Dharma jewel is the realization of those teachings in the mind of an arhat, someone who has seen reality directly. And we take refuge in the Sangha jewel, symbolized by the robe Sangha that we see at Kadampa Center and elsewhere. But we're not taking refuge in monks and nuns. We're taking refuge in an arhat, someone who has seen reality directly, who sees emptiness, as the conventional Sangha. The ultimate Sangha is the cessation of all defilements and the freedom from suffering that exists in the mind of an arhat. And again, that is a possibility for each of us. We have the symbolic representations that bring these to mind. We have the conventional jewels that we take refuge in. And we have the ultimate jewels, which at some point will become the nature of our own mind. They will be completely internalized within our own consciousness. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Okay, and you can relax your concentration. Thank you to Linda for managing this module, and thank you to everyone for participating. And watch for messages from Donna about the refuge ceremony, because you do have to register. They have to have you on the list, or you don't get a name, and it's not you're not really participating. Also remind people that Venerable George Chernoff is teaching at Kadampa Center via Zoom on Sundays and Wednesdays for the next couple weeks. He is an extremely qualified Western monk, graduate of MIT, and incredible wealth of Buddhist knowledge, and a wonderful teacher. So those are on Wednesday evenings and Sunday mornings, and they're just in our regular Zoom sessions. And everybody stay healthy and have a wonderful holiday season.
Thank you so much, Robbie.
Okay, thank you. Robbie, yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Robbie, thank you very much.
Hi, Robbie. Thank you, Linda.
Bye, everyone. Linda. Happy holidays.
Bye.
Happy holidays.
See you in January.
Or on the 29th, maybe.
Yeah, the 29th.
Yeah, 29th. Or some of Venerable George's teachings.
Yes, on Zoom. Yes, okay. Thank you, everyone.
Around.
Take care.
Thanks so much, Robbie. Good night.